You're listening to Japan Baseball Weekly. News, interviews, analysis, and hot takes about all 12 NPB teams. Hosted by Jim Allen and John E. Gibson.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of May 2nd. I'm John Gibson, and with me on a Sunday night is my buddy, Jim Allen. How you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty well for a Sunday night. How are you?
I'm almost frozen solid. This is ridiculous. I want my spring back.
I know. What happened? Let's see. This week we went from summer to spring rainy season, and now we're back in winter. So it's like a sampler of Japan seasons. If the leaves start falling, I know we're in a movie or something.
Well, I want a sampler of my refund. I want all my money back.
I'm sorry. I missed that part where you paid for the seasons in the first place. So
that's not the point.
Okay.
Don't get mired in the details.
Well, you know me. Getting mired in details is pretty much my life. So
yeah, I was going to say, if we could get you out of the details, you'd be able to see the sun.
Right? Yeah, that's probably pretty much true, yeah.
All right, well, I'll have to get over it. Anyway, on this week's show, we've got a conversation with Jesse Biddle of the Oryx Buffaloes. We've got mini tracks and some high heat, so let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
Before Jim gets started, I would like to recognize that we lost the great Wayne Grosick about 5 years ago. God rest his soul. We still think of him. I still think of him often. I keep this obit from the Japan Times on my desk here in the office and refer to it and wave to Wayne and think about him often. And I do miss him. I do miss him.
Yeah, same here. where would we be without him?
Don't want to think about that.
No.
But not just a great friend, but a big person in stature in Japanese baseball and getting it out to the non-Japanese speaking, English speaking audiences. I think worldwide too, but particularly sure. Here in Japan. So we do miss you, Wayne. And I also want to send out best wishes to Jason Koskri, our friend and a colleague in the baseball world who had a family issue recently and had to go back to the States. So I just want to send you some good vibes in your direction, Jason. We love you, man, and we're thinking about you as well.
Yeah, glad you're back in Japan.
Yeah, it's good to have you back and good to have you back and active on Twitter. People were asking about you, actually.
It was awfully quiet without him as often as I don't tweet. You know, it's having Jason back feels like the world is kind of normal again.
Right. Well, I did get one DM, someone asking me, hey, where's Jason? You know, so I did get that. And I said, hey, you know, I'm not divulging any of his private business, but he did have to go back to the States for an issue. So, and it happens. We all have families. It has happened to me as well. So we've got to get through it somehow, just like the coronavirus. You just got to power through it, I guess.
Okay. Well, I recently spoke with Jesse Biddle of the Oryx Buffaloes. And it was really fun. We'd never met, although I have since rectified that. We did meet the other day briefly and said hi at Tokyo Dome, which was kind of cool.
Oh, but awesome.
Yeah. Yep. We didn't have a chance to talk, but we did get to say hi. And it's been a lot of fun watching him. But when I spoke to him, I hadn't really seen much of the videos of him being so excited in his first outings here, but he's been very effective. And he's just really very articulate guy. And I think it's really worth having a listen. So let's get into it.
Our guest this week on the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast is relief pitcher Jesse Biddle of the Oryx Buffaloes. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
Yeah. Okay, so the first thing I want to ask you is, you know, you had a really unusual spring. You missed because in Japan, spring training starts February 1st and it ends towards the end of February, and then it's no longer called spring training here. So they say you missed the whole thing because you arrived in March.
Yes.
And you're probably thinking, what, the season starts tomorrow? What's going on here? So tell me about how did you mediate or navigate your preparations for this season?
Well, it was difficult, I'll say that. I mean, this would be my 12th year of professional baseball.
Okay.
Obviously, first year in Japan, but I'm used to having a spring training, obviously. So this was really a new challenge, not only moving to a new country, but also kind of getting thrown into the fire, so to speak. I got here on, let's see, I landed in Japan on March 12th, and the season started March 25th. So I was, you know, I had two kind of spring training outings and, you know, was ready to go as much as I could be.
Wow. Were you able to ramp up your preparations in the States before you came?
Yeah, you know, my wife and I actually moved to Los Angeles originally from, we're from Philadelphia, but we moved to Los Angeles a couple years ago, and I will say, I mean, if there was ever a place to get stuck and have to kind of create your own spring training, Los Angeles is the place to be.
Yeah, we've heard that too, especially if you're... if your agent is connected.
Yeah, there's no shortage of Major League Baseball players out there in Los Angeles. So there were a lot of guys looking for at bats and a lot of pitchers looking to throw. So we set up some fun scrimmages and I was able to get my innings up.
Oh, excellent. Excellent, because it looked like, you know, as you said, 2 weeks into the, you know, 2 weeks after you arrived, you were pretty much popping and ready to go.
Yeah. I mean, there was definitely an excitement about this new opportunity and being around my new teammates and just trying to make, have a good first impression.
Okay.
But trying to navigate my way through Japan as well as Japanese baseball was a tough challenge, but they have a really good setup here and a lot of supportive people, so I'm very fortunate.
Yeah, it's hard to get a scope, not just for the players, but for the media as well and the fans for how different each team is. So you'll find that as you go around the league, you know, there'll be that like, do they do this for you? Do you have to do this on your own? You'll find out all the nooks and crannies of how the teams are all different. Now, Oryx, is Oryx as a team or is being a part of this, your new team, comparable to anything you'd experienced in the past?
Well, I mean, I don't know. It's definitely a different style of baseball here. But the coaches and the support staff they have, it's extremely, it's just positive. You know, every player seems to be just having fun playing baseball, and that can, you know, we'll see how things are looking in September. You know, kind of the dog days of summer.
Sure.
But from my experience, the baseball here is just it's fun. Everyone's having a good time. The fans are really fun to interact with, and I couldn't speak highly enough about my experience so far.
Yeah, I sincerely hope that before you do go, because that you get to experience the full Asian baseball, you know, the full volume Asian baseball.
Yeah.
A lot of guys came in 2020 and left before they got it. So
I know. It's definitely a very interesting and tough time to be traveling. I wish I could, you know, have my family come visit me and all those things. But you know, that's a part of the deal.
It is. I'm thankful. I'm thankful to you and to Oryx also for opening their doors, because a lot of the Japanese teams have used the pandemic as an excuse to shut out the media.
Sure.
So you guys are one of Oryx is one of my go-to teams.
Oh, that's great. That's great. I'm glad.
Okay. Now, how are your pitches playing so far in Japan?
Yeah. You know, I've had to kind of reevaluate the way that I view pitching. The game here is just a little different,
right?
And there was really no way for me to know that. Like, in, terms of how my specific stuff is going to play here until I found out. Mm-hmm. Obviously, a full spring training might have been nice, but mm-hmm. we're kind of flying by the seat of our pants and then doing our best at this point. I have a lot of, you know, veteran pitchers who I can talk to.
Right.
And the coaches have been awesome about trying to help me out with, mm-hmm. with just kind of formulating a game plan. But at the end of the day, the most important part is just being able to read hitters and, you know, really take feedback and be a constant critic of myself.
Yeah, you have to be really open because you're going to see things that don't really make sense straight off the bat. Literally straight off the bat.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And even I'd been here forever, and it took me a long time to realize something very fundamental about Japan's game, and that was one of the pitchers told me I had to junk my two-seamer to left-handed hitters because they would just look for that puppy and then slash it to left field because they weren't trying to drive it. They were just waiting for me to put it on a tee for them.
Yeah, oh, so you played.
No. One of the players told me this. But I'd been covering it for 30 years, and I never realized that left-handed hitters profile differently. There's a radical difference between the number of slap-hitting lefties in Japan compared to everywhere else in the world.
Yeah, and you know, the one of the big things is in America, there's and obviously it's a little different now this mm-hmm. year, but because they've been in the shift, but the shift was a big part of how you would have to pitch and how you would have to kind of create a game plan.
Mm-hmm.
And the shift is much less common here, and it's changed my approach a little bit when it comes to pitching to righties and lefties as well.
Right. I have to think about that, about adjusting back to adjusting to life without the shift. Now you guys will see teams that shift on your hitters, but it's mostly Nippon Ham. They're probably the only team that does serious radical shifting, and usually against Yoshida, and that's about it.
Right.
Okay. Interesting. Now another thing that we don't see in the media and the fans don't see is what's life like in the bullpen? Because again, every team's a little different, and it was also probably quite different from what you were used to in the States.
Yeah. I think life in the bullpen is a lot of trying to watch and learn.
Mm-hmm.
The game is happening. We're watching it on TV. It's different here where the bullpens, most of them are inside.
Right.
So you kind of, you're inside. You feel like you're sort of like waiting for your turn in the arena, you know, and then you run out and you kind of feel that gust of wind, and you see the thousands of fans, and you know, you feel like now you're it's your turn to shine.
Okay.
It's definitely a little different in that capacity. I'll say, like in the major leagues in America, you're sitting outside the whole time for the most part, and you're kind of with the fans, you're feeling the energy of the game.
Mm.
And here, you're sort of waiting your turn for that moment. And I actually really like it, you know? It makes it that much more special every time you get the ball.
Interesting. Have you picked a walk-on music from Gladiator yet, or...?
Yeah, that's what it feels like. I have not. My walkout song is actually a song that I used back when I was in high school.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so it's...
What is it?
Just reminded me of the old days. Public service announcement by Jay-Z.
Okay.
I'm from inner city Philly, so we pretty strictly do rap.
Okay.
Or else we're cool, you know?
Okay. Okay. Well, one of the things that I always ask about it, especially in the bullpen, is because Japanese baseball is constantly in transition. It's really always hard to pick up where it was. You know, as you know, Roki Sasaki was pulled from an eighth inning game in which he was throwing a perfect game last Sunday. And 30 years ago, the manager would have gotten death threats.
Sure.
He probably wouldn't have ever thought of pulling him out 30 years ago.
Yeah.
But now it was like, I read, the response is mixed, but it was pretty supportive. It was pretty much, we got it. We understand what's going on here.
Yeah.
So the bullpens, too, have been a transition because 30 years ago, pretty much every reliever's job was to get hot a couple of times during the game. and then wait for their turn. And even if it never comes, they do the same thing tomorrow. Get hot, and then, you know. Have you observed that? Do you have any of your teammates who still do that?
So I will say this. I mean, the way that this bullpen is handled here, mm-hmm. it has been a lot more organized, and there are really defined roles.
Okay.
And you notice mistakes with analytics, and oftentimes the manager is not actually making the decision. It's coming from, you know, a computer upstairs that's kind of giving you matchups, mm-hmm. and you're making decisions on the fly.
Okay.
That the bullpen can be really a tough place because you could pitch the eighth inning, you could also pitch the second inning. And that's a really tough place to be when you're a pitcher. And that's something that analytics doesn't necessarily take into account.
Mm.
So for me, knowing, like, okay, I have the eighth inning if we are tied or we are winning.
Okay.
It is such a, I have such a good rhythm here now. I mean, it's only been a few weeks of the season, but I really feel like I'm in mid-season form and in a really, really good routine. And I have the team to thank for that.
Well, that's interesting because it's constantly, you know, every pitcher finds their own way. Every player has to find their own way, you know, to adapt their mentality and their physicality and you know, their intelligence to the game. So, you know, you're going to go through times when your rhythm isn't there. You're going to go times when the pitches aren't working, you know, as you said, that you're still flying by the seat of your pants and the pitches aren't working. And so you're fortunate you still haven't had to make, like, you know, question like the fundamentals of, like, why am I even playing this game kind of thing, which happens some people.
Well, I've asked myself that question a lot of times.
Okay, well, let me ask you then, why are you still playing the game? Because it's been up and down for you.
Yes, up and down is a good way to put it. A lot of, you know, I think the answer is probably relatively complicated and would take longer than one podcast.
Okay.
This might need to be a series. But I play the game because, you know, I still do enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
The competition is really the thing that keeps, I think, a lot of us motivated.
Right.
It's not necessarily for the love of the game.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of a cliche.
Right.
It's more for the love of the competition. There's just nothing in this world where you can that equals the feeling of beating the hitter.
Mm.
You know, I mean, every time I go out there, my goal is just to prove that I'm better than the guy who's in the box. It doesn't matter who it is.
Right.
And as soon as I've embraced, when I embrace that aspect of it, I don't think about or take into account kind of all of the other things that are happening around it. You think about everything you have to lose when things go badly and everything you have to gain when things go well.
Yeah.
That's when you get into trouble.
Yeah.
You know, I just really focus on the competition aspect of it and just try to focus on executing what I need to execute.
Now, that's a great answer, and I don't know why I have never asked that question before, but only since you mentioned it. But how what kind of help have you gotten from the coaches? Because it's always, you know, it's difficult for the coaches too. You know, this guy doesn't know about Japanese baseball. What should, you know, they are always testing the boundaries. You know, what's the best space for this player?
Yeah, I think the coaches are. They probably know when to step in and when not to. You know, things have been going pretty well so far with my season, so I don't feel like they've really felt like they need to overreach or, you know, me and the pitching coach have a little bit of like a running joke where every time I get done, he says, how are you feeling about Japanese baseball? Are you getting used to it yet? And that's, you know, and every time I say a little closer.
Good. Who's the
pitcher? Talk to me in 50 outings, you know?
Yeah.
That's the thing about being a bullpen guy is you got to do this thing 60 times a year right around.
Right.
So you get too high, you get too low. That's when you get into trouble, and I'm definitely falling victim to that a lot of times.
Well, you've got some guys out there who I would really trust. Atsushi Nomi's still hanging around, and Yoshihisa Hirano's a great guy.
Yeah, we got a good group, and it's great to watch the way they go about their business, and you know, this is a team full of a lot of talented players. I've just had a good time getting to know everybody and just watch and learn.
Yeah, hopefully, you know, some of the guys who were propelling the team last year will, you know, they're going to find their rhythm. I know, like, the cleanup hitter, Yutaro Sugimoto, is going to find his rhythm. And some guys are going to come back from the sick list, which is going to help. You guys, that was the last question I wanted to ask because, you know, Oryx, as I say on my blog, called in sick last week. And it kind of threw everybody, it threw a lot of people off, not just Oryx, but, you know, did that affect you at all, not having a game for a week?
I'm a baseball player.
Okay.
So if we can get an off day, we don't say no because they don't come around too often.
Okay.
But obviously, with everybody getting COVID, the biggest thing was just focusing on, you know, is everybody okay? Is everyone healthy? You know, and then when can we get this thing back on track? And when can we get ourselves back to full strength? Because we're missing, you know, some key pieces.
Sure.
And some guys who are really important to this team, not just on the field, but also in the clubhouse.
Mm.
And, you know, as soon as we can get back to full strength, I think, you know, we're going to start rattling off some wins. We're just trying to keep afloat right now.
Okay. Well, I hope so because, you know, the manager, Satoshi Nakajima, got huge, just wonderful reviews since he took over. And us in the Western media are big fans, so we hope that I don't want to say recapture some of last year's magic, but I think the magic's there.
yeah. I mean, look, it's a long year, you know, and there's nothing that a 5-6 game winning streak can't solve. you know, that's really what it comes down to at the end of the day, and we're just. You know, we're focused on SoftBank right now. It's a good team.
Yeah.
And, you know, if we could maybe string some hits together tonight and put up some zeros, we're going to be feeling a whole lot better about ourselves tomorrow.
Yeah, get over the – I mean, last night was kind of an ugly – I mean, it was going to happen anyway just because Ishikawa had one of those games that he has now and then. But,
yeah.
But, you know, that is the game, is that weird stuff happens and get over it. So.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Okay.
We got a short memory, and we just gotta keep moving.
Yeah, indeed. I wish I could do that. Okay. Thank you very much for joining us, Jesse Biddle, and good luck to you the rest of the season.
Thanks so much for having me. This was a lot of fun.
Okay, great.
Okay, Mr. Biddle, thank you very much, and look forward to seeing you again and talking to you a little longer.
And I hope to meet you soon, as I say to all these people, but all the guests who come on the show, whom I have yet to meet, but in the COVID era, I might never get to meet them, right?
Yeah, he's the first new player I've met since the spring of 2020.
I know that you sent me a message and you said, you know, you don't have to make reservations to get into Tokyo Dome. You can get in now. And I'm like, huh.
Only right. When the fight.
I didn't realize you were there at the moment that you were telling me that.
Well, that's how I knew. And there's a couple of, I know that Seibu, the Seibu Dome, what is it called? Seibu Dome. I can't keep up. And Tokyo Dome, when the fighters play, there are two parks that the reporters don't need to make advance reservations.
Right.
So the reporters are still... Well, reporters are still locked in 2020 early pandemic sort of paranoia treatment by the teams.
Right. Stay away from our players.
Yeah, pretty much. So all these guys are getting COVID. They're not getting it from the reporters who aren't allowed to talk to them.
Nope. That is true.
So, John, I know you have some to comment, so why don't you just go at it?
All right. Well, besides Jesse having to pick through your comments and thinking that you played baseball, which...
Yeah, I didn't realize what he was talking about. It was just because I was direct quoting former Carp and Marines pitcher Jay Jackson.
Yes, I know that, and I heard you say that, but I think...
I didn't understand why he picked it up that way because it didn't occur to me that I was direct quoting him. I was just talking.
No, I think this is what happens is we talk to these players whom we haven't met, and we're used to doing it, I think, at the park. And in part, it's because we have to show we have baseball knowledge beyond what they think we know. And so you're always trying to, and I say you, but you and I both, and I think a lot of the reporters who talk to the players, not just by asking intelligent questions, but we also have to prove a little bit about our knowledge. And I think, you know, you were in the midst of telling a story, and I think he just missed that part because it was clear. You said, I mean, it's clear. You said a pitcher was telling me, and then you started to quote him. And so there's no misspeaking on your part.
It wasn't misspeaking, but it was ambivalent because I said it sounded like he was telling me that I had to fix my pitches. Okay, and if you're on the other end of the line and you've never met me, you wouldn't know that I wasn't a pitcher. I mean, you might conceivably think of that, unless you've heard me talk for 5 minutes. So when I heard it, I went, "That's what it was." Okay, it wasn't the knowledge or the language. It was the fact that I said he told me I had to do this, and what I meant was he said.
Well, he had it's to do this. I don't think there was anything wrong with your presentation or anything. I think sometimes when we're trying to talk to these players and show them that we have knowledge and give them information, that it can be a lot, especially in a telephone or Zoom conversation. Mm. There are other distractions there. We're not in the same room. They can't pick up the body language, the other. You know, signals. And I just think it's difficult. So, I mean, from what you told me about your athletic skills, and we just won't even allow him to think that you ever really played baseball at any other level than pickup.
No, I did reference a Giants pitcher the other day and said his control might not have been better than mine. Nobutakimomura, in case you're guessing.
Okay. But anyway, getting back to the interview, I was impressed with Jesse saying, you know, how easy it must be to get some high level pickup baseball games going in Los Angeles. I mean, it sounds like you might bump into a baseball player at every other Starbucks or something. And I guess, you know, you just make a couple calls and it really must be easy to, and even finding parks. I was really interested in that. Where do they find a place to play? Because a lot of these guys, we had this interesting off season with the lockout in Major League Baseball. So I assume a lot of players were getting together and playing. And we heard about it in the NFL in the early COVID era, Tom Brady going to parks with receivers and getting kicked out of the parks and schools and other places. I wonder where they played. But there's the biggest thing I think about listening to Jesse speak, and he does sound like a fun guy, and I'm really excited with all these guys. The teams, a lot of them bring over really high quality people, not just players. But they're quality people generally. So I'm excited to meet him. But I don't think Jesse sounds like he is an inner city guy from Philadelphia. He doesn't talk that way. You know, I needed more, you know, practicing of the accent. You know, where's the Allen Iverson? Because we are talking about practice here. He's got to practice the accent. He doesn't have it down. He doesn't sound like anything like from Philly, inner city. And I did like the part about the fun that he spoke about. And I'm sensing this is a trend maybe around NPB. And I don't even know when it might have started. I can't really put a finger on it. But it seems like for the longest time, we've had guys really looking tight and playing tight and acting tight and speaking tight-lipped in interviews. And when I heard him say that about having fun, and looked at the Buffaloes and considering that we've got Tsuyoshi Shinjo, Big Boss, having fun, so much fun with his players who are also having fun. And I even saw the Tigers today, Junya Nishi, their starting pitcher, he was smiling and having a lot of fun on the bench, watching his team score some late runs and get him closer to that first win of the season. And just a lot of teams, I mean, a lot of teams seem to be smiling a lot more than maybe, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago. I don't know.
Might be.
it didn't hit me until he said it. And I thought, yeah, fun. You know, we've had a lot of Alex Ramirez hitting a home run and doing a little performance in front of the camera, in front of the dugout, and that kind of spread. And we've got everybody, not everybody, but a lot of teams and a lot of players doing something toward the camera, or Yuris Belgracial with the SoftBank Hawks doing his little boxing thing. We've got all kinds of fun happening, but when Jesse's put it the way he put it, I do see a lot more fun going around. I don't know about the Dragons and Mr. One Clap, Kazuyoshi Tatsunami. seems like whenever something really positive happens, you get your one clap from him, but then it's back to business. He's not really into all that jumping around and emotion stuff. No hook 'em horn signs or hang loose or whatever it is that Big Boss is doing. But he has his moments. And I can even say the Dragons, you know, as tough as it is for them to score, when Takaya Ishikawa hit his first home run, that was at Jingu, and went around the bases and got this really poignant moment from Dayan Viciedo when he returned to the bench, and Viciedo just gave him, he said, "You did it, kid." And he gave him this warm embrace. That was really, really fun. And so I'm thinking about, you know, it's different from Skipper being under skippers like Katsuya Nomura and Seiichi Hoshino, God rest their souls. It just seems like there's a lot more fun going around. So maybe, I don't know if it's that we're supposedly coming out of the COVID era, because we've got fans back in the stands and they want to be entertaining, and it's better to be entertaining when you're smiling. I don't know what's happening, but and I don't know when it started, but I do sense that there's a lot more fun out there. So, and I didn't notice it until Jesse mentioned it in this interview.
Oh, I think the fun is, I certainly see what you're saying. And until recently, a lot of the quote unquote fun in Japanese baseball was orchestrated. Mm-hmm. Like you mentioned, the home run performances. And there is a lot of that. And that I don't mind. But I think what you're talking about is kind of spontaneous joy. That's something that Japanese baseball has been kind of lax about, or, you know, not really big on.
Really? I mean, I don't know. The spontaneous joy, the Koji Akiyama backflips and somersaults to touch home.
But that was his performance, you know, that was the performance kind of thing.
Sure. That kind of orchestrated thing was out there. But as far as the spontaneous fun, you know, it has been around.
Sure.
And I've noticed a lot of that. But, I mean, I'm just talking about general guys just smiling, you know, going out to take their... You know, we're going out, it's the beginning of the game, and they're just smiling.
Right. Well, I do recall before Norifumi Nishimura took over at Oryx that the Buffaloes players used to enjoy having a lot of fun during practice when Daijiro Oishi was the manager, and when Terry Collins was the manager. You know, the guys had fun. They weren't really very they weren't great. They weren't great teams, but fun kind of went out the window with Nishimura. He's just such a business-like guy. I mean, he's a very likable, nice guy. Don't get me wrong. I'm very fond of him, but he's not a lot of fun. And with Satoshi Nakajima, he's much more relaxed. I mean, it's hard to imagine a catcher being relaxed because, you know, this is a guy who was a catcher for 20 some years. And it's such a hard job, and you have to be so tuned into everything going on the field, virtually everything going on the field. It's hard to imagine these guys ever have a time to even smile, but he's pretty laid back as they go.
Right.
So, yeah, that I did think about that. That wasn't really the answer I was kind of looking for, but what the heck, you know, you get what you get. One of the things that I was also thinking about the pickup games, and obviously, you know, we've had this discussion with guys before, you know, guys going places to get in games, guys living in Florida, not having any problems. guys getting pickup games against other players early in the spring. But late in the spring, I'm thinking, okay, this is all lockout stuff.
So right.
Certainly. And there are places to play. And I asked him about his agent because I know that Nolan Arenado has a huge practice facility near L.A., and I'm sure there were people working out there, although he's a Wasserman guy, which is a different agency. But, you know, that could have been a venue. I'm sure there's more than other agents have their practice venues, and I wouldn't have been surprised if some of the players were gravitating there.
Right.
So the other thing that I really surprised me was the bit about the routine and schedule in the bullpen. Because this is kind of a thing, you know, this is kind of a thing that has been kind of absent in Japan. You know, they're still sort of working out. Managers are still trying to do something different with every bullpen. And they love their matchups here too. Although I think they tend to do them more with starting pitchers and, you know, with like, I remember we had a pitcher on from the Fighters who said, basically, I never know I'm going to pitch. Because the manager will decide I'm a better matchup against this team than that. So it looks like it's going to be my day and they don't tell me.
Right.
So we've had that, but I thought it was very cool. And I do, I certainly have a sympathy for, you know, for him saying that analytics had caused people, either him or people he knew, to never know when they were going to pitch because the manager was basing everything, you know, managers were occasionally basing things on matchups against this individual hitter. But I think that's also, and I think that does happen because there's always, you know, there's only so many things that you can measure. And often, and sometimes with analytics, people will tend to, or with any kind of information, they'll tend to focus on what they can measure and ignore the other possible, you know, downsides. It's not, it's only information. It's not knowledge. You don't know all the variables. So,
and this is
one of my favorite things about the Hiroshi Gondo's, you know, middle relief rotation, which, you know, he had five middle relievers that he liked. And, you know, if it was the sixth inning, who's the last guy, the next guy who hasn't pitched, he's our guy. Everybody knew what order they were going to come in. Everybody got regular work. And he said, I asked him, did you worry about matchups? He says, no, these guys can pitch to left-handers. They can pitch to right-handers. And I think it's much better that you know you're going to get regular work and you can expect to be in the games than worrying, you know, than thinking, am I going to be in? Am I going to be out? What's going on?
So, yeah, I recently heard, you know, I like to listen to radio as opposed to watch the TV broadcasts. And I don't remember who this commentator was, or the color commentator was, but he talked about the fact that roles were so important. And, but then he also added that, but it depends on the player. You know, some guys can do whatever the manager wants because they're gung-ho and at least they'll try and they're going to go out and do the best. And other guys want to know everything ahead of time. You know, when am I coming in? Who am I going to face? How many pitches do I need to, you know, stay under? I need to know it all. And so that's when it says manager in front of the head guy's name, the head honcho's name on the team. They're not just talking about when to steal and where to play the infield and are we going to put a shift on or anything. They're talking about managing all the egos and the personalities and all the things that go with the human beings. And that's such a challenge as well, not just the part, the baseball parts.
Yeah, and then the last part was, I'm going to have to ask everybody this same question now, you know, why do you even play baseball? Because that was such a little lucky little, you know, that was a cookie he gave me. I was thinking, and it was such a great answer. And I really enjoyed that. And I guess the other one was, I had never thought about the difference in the bullpens being a physical difference about the bullpens. although he probably wouldn't have said that if he pitched for the Swallows. they're the only team that has the regular bullpens on the field in Japan.
Right.
So,
right.
Although yeah. a couple of others well, are they, like yeah, that, outside, but you know, on the Chiba and Yokohama are just on the other side of the fence. But
and at Seibu Dome, you'll know
right.
at least if somebody's pitching right, or not. Seibu, you might not be able to see who it is, but you'll hear the glove pop.
Right. They are actually on the field. They're just separated by a fence and they're actually in the open and visible. So I'll give them, they're a much more major league style too. Forgot about Seibu. I haven't been right, anywhere for so long.
It did seem like you were having this cathartic kind of moment with that question and say, hey, well, let's ask you, why are you playing baseball? And then the answer was good too. And I knew you would talk about that. I enjoyed the answer as well. And I think it's the same for a lot of these, all these players who they are competitive, they're super competitive, and they're willing to travel all these miles to come to a country in which they can't speak the language and they don't know what the food's going to be like and all these other things that they have to learn and adjust to do differently just to have that competitive, have their competitive juices flowing. And, it's great to hear these guys express that on the show. And yeah, even at the end when he said, yeah, it was a lot of fun. And I'm thinking, well, geez, that's an invitation to have him on again, you know, sometime this season. So let's try to make that happen.
Milk it, baby. All right.
Well, thank you so much for doing the interview. It was really fun. And Jesse's a really fun guy. And I said, I look forward to meeting him sometime this season. Hopefully, yeah, I can get out there if they're coming up this way again for Interleague. I can make it out to one of these parks where reservations are not required.
I know. Isn't that wild?
Too wild. All right. Let's make a four-seam transition and talk. I guess we're going to talk about as many teams as possible in our mini track segment, the first one of the season. So we'll have a top three and a bottom three, and I guess we can throw in the other teams since there's so many of them in the middle of the pack. But so I'll start. I've got my top three. I'll just tell you what teams they are right now, and then we'll discuss. How's that? Before the Hanshin Tigers went on the five-game winning streak to end the month, and then today on May 1st, they got their sixth consecutive win, but a five-game winning streak to end the month. I had Yomiuri operating at close to peak performance, considering all the perceived holes and issues. And I think part of the perceived, and I made mention of it in the Central League prediction special that, you know, they've got a lot of question marks, but they're the Giants and they're going to have quality people out there. And they have in the form of all these young arms, and they've had no fewer than six pitchers record their first professional or top team victories in April. And that's an NPP record. And that's just part of it. You know, you've got Kazuma Okamoto is banging just the way Warren Cromartie envisioned him when Warren was on our show a few years back, and he was an advisor to the team and wanted Okamoto to drive the ball to right and right center. And you know, Warren saying, you've got to be able to power the ball out that way too and make pitchers think about that. And, you know, he's taking pitches on the inside part of the plate and yanking them out. And he's taking pitches down and away, up and away, and punching those out the other way. And again, all these new pitchers. I think Taisei Ota is probably the biggest surprise because he's a rookie who's out there setting records as the Giants closer and racking up more saves than any other Giants rookie closer in history. So they're my number one, but I don't know that they're that far ahead of Rockton. I know the Eagles aren't necessarily killing it, but they are in first place, and they have been impressive to me in, I guess, the runs allowed area, because they had been allowing the fewest in NPB. Now, I don't know if that's still the case. As of Thursday, they had the fewest it allowed is. In NPB. Okay.
By a long shot, yeah.
Yeah, and then they were a plus 30 on Thursday. I think that number might have gone up a little bit because they handled SoftBank in that series So they actually, it was scheduled 3-game series. They got rained out on Friday, and then they came back to win on Saturday, 7-6, and then they won today, 2-1. So, were you saying about the plus minus was the best in Japan?
The ratio. I don't do plus minus. The ratio, yeah.
Oh, run differential or whatever you
the
want
run,
to call
the
it.
The run the ratio, yeah.
Okay. What do you want to call it? The ratio of runs scored to runs allowed?
Well, that's technically what it is. We can call it the run ratio, though.
Run ratio. All right. I want to stick with your terminology so that we are on the same page, bro.
Okay.
I like that. Okay. So the run ratio. But, I mean, they're doing so well on the defensive side, and I think that gets overlooked because we know that they have some really good pitching, at least starting pitching for sure. But they're catching the ball, and they're making batted balls in the outs. A lot of times in the outfield with some spectacular catches, sometimes on the infield, but they're just making all those routine plays as well. So I think if you look at the numbers, SoftBank might be third in NPB for me, but you know, again, their run ratio is not great, but they have scored more runs than, let's say, Lotte. And Lotte, they're just weird to me. They're, you know, the plus and the run ratio, but they have a losing record, and I'm concerned. I have to admit that it's not just that a couple, you know, some of the guys are not hitting the way I expected them to hit, but I'm concerned. But anyway, my top three: Yomiuri, Rakuten, and SoftBank.
Yeah, I mean, I can't really argue with that. The Carp have kind of they've fallen flashly. They've fallen flat, I think, because they have this bad habit of giving the ball to Shota Nakazaki in the eighth inning, although I think this week cured him of it.
Yeah, I think they're going to give him a ball, and it's going to say, you know, minor league team, go
yeah,
now,
it's gonna
go
say,
this way.
It's going to have a map to the team's the minor league facility in Yamaguchi Prefecture, yep.
And it says, no ticket.
Says, you know, that's right. It says, you know where the bus is, dude.
Pay your right. own way.
Exactly. No, I'm fine with that. The Carp has certainly had a lot of quality. The Hawks still have a lot of quality. I'm hugely positive on a lot of the Hawks young guys, especially Tatsuru Yanagimachi and Masaki Mimori, their leadoff hitter. So they're hanging in there. The pitching's been kind of up and down, but I'm pleased with them. So the Giants, yeah, definitely they had a little bit of a rough spot, but you know, I'm good with that. The Eagles, definitely. I never really would have expected it. Maybe it's my lingering subconscious feeling that Kazuhisa Ishii can't really be a manager. It's just something I kind of can't get away from it whenever I see him.
Yeah, it seems, I would say lingering, but the way you keep bringing it up at every opportunity, it's maybe not lingering. It's maybe out.
No, but I mean, it's an image, and I know it's superficial, but the whole idea just I can't escape it. It's sort of a subconscious obsession of mine. Objectively, I don't really see anything he's doing that's really dumb or any, I don't have any reason to doubt his abilities to manage, but you know, I've been seeing the guy for 30 years and I'm used to his goofball act.
Yeah. All you see is Gomer Pyle.
Yeah, pretty much. I'm used to the goofball act. So, it's hard to believe, but no, I like that. And of course the big thing for the Eagles, the obvious big thing for the Eagles has been Haruki Nishikawa.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you just got to love that. And the whole thing of the Fighters releasing him at the age of 30, you have to think, what were they thinking?
Well, you think, well, this guy needs to go somewhere and maybe it'll spark his, you know, his fire and get his career back on track. And that's exactly what's happening.
Indeed.
So yeah, guy batting over 330, and well, we'll get to it next week when we do the top players of the month. But he has had a fantastic opening act. for the Eagles. What about the bottom three? So my bottom three basically right now is fluid.
It's a lot more fluid this week than it was last week.
If we had done this last week, it would have really been easy, but it just now it's changing. But I'm going to leave them in no particular order. But Nippon Ham, this team has a lot of talent, and I like some of the outfielders. And in fact, Yuma Imagawa, who is starting to crack homers left, right, and everywhere else, is just part of a great group of young outfielders that I think Big Boss is just going to have. He's just, you know, I was listening to the radio, as I mentioned, this past week, and I think it was on the radio. I might have been watching TV when this was said, but the color commentator said, well, the thing about Big Boss is that he stated that everybody in the organization is going to have a chance to play on the top team. So that no matter what you're doing, either on the farm or on the top team, at some point you might end up on the farm or the top team, and that you'll get a chance to play. And so he really has been, the number of lineups he has thrown out there have been almost uncountable. They've been so different. He's playing a lot of guys. I don't know if he's playing matchups per se, but he might do something well one day, and then we don't see you for a couple of days in the lineup because somebody else is playing. And this kid, Imagawa, he had a breakout game this past week. He hit two home runs, and they were both at Tokyo Dome, but they were not the typical Tokyo Dome pop up home runs that kind of floated out. He blasted a couple, so that was impressive. And he hit another one today. And he doesn't look like he's a thin guy in the upper half of his body, but he's got some pop for sure. And you know how much I love Chusei Manami, and they have Daiki Asama. They just have some really good players who really can crowd that outfield. And I see what they were doing if the plan was to release Nishikawa and give some of these guys a chance, but I'm sure they'd like to have some of that production back. But anyway, so Nippon Ham for me was really down in the bottom three for sure, but again, had a really good finish to the month, so making it hard. But I'm going to leave them down there because of their overall record. They're still almost 10 games under 500 at 10-19. I said in no particular order, right? Okay. So next up for me is DeNA, and I think DeNA might be worse than we think. This team is really, in my opinion, squeezing some wins out of when I looked at it, they had a minus 25 run ratio, and that might have gotten better, but it's still bad. And somehow they're only five games under 500, so they're doing a whole lot with very little in terms of production, giving up a lot of runs, not scoring as much as any of the other teams. I think, the only team that has, there are a couple teams that have fewer runs than they do. That's Oryx and Lotte. But again, not really scoring a lot and giving up a lot. So I think, like I said, my opening statement on this team could be worse than we think. It's just that they're figuring out how to win some of those close games. And then obviously at the very bottom is the Hanshin Tigers, but this winning streak to close out the month and then open up May is really good for them in terms of at least bringing the fun back to baseball, because it was really getting dark. I remember tweeting at some point last week with the sinking ship GIF, and I thought, that's kind of harsh, but it's still early. And I remember when I was playing college basketball, my college roommate, I wasn't playing college basketball per se. I was playing basketball while I was in college, but it wasn't college level basketball. But I had a game in which my roommate at the time, he says, well, you know, you get behind by 20 points in the first half and the game's over. And I'm like, no, that means you have a whole second half to make up for all the bad things that you did in the first half. And I always believed that a first half lead was never safe. And so whether you were the team that had the lead or you were the team that was in the deficit, And so I have to believe that getting behind so early and having so much time to make up for it, I think they still have, you know, I was tweeting some Tigers fans saying, well, you can shoot for third place, but I think they can shoot for higher than that. And someone, I can't remember the player's name, but said in the Hero interview recently this week during this weekend series, hey, look, we think we can still win the championship, and that's what we're going to try to go out and do, or we're going to try to play for day to day. But anyway, those are my bottom three teams. What are your comments?
Oh, I'm with you on them. I think that's pretty much every Tigers Hero interview. We won today, so we're going to win tomorrow, and we'll be back in this thing. You know, and,
oh, well, I mean, I don't think he put it like that, but no, just, I think they changed the boilerplate. So let's put it that way.
They do a little bit. They give him cue cards. Right. So Saturday, Yuta Watanabe, who's a 30-year-old rookie, won his first game. And I mean, he's not a first year player by any means. I think this is his fifth year as a pro, but he spent most of it on his fifth year since he signed a contract. 30-year-old guy says, look, if you know, it took me until I was 30 to get my first win, you know, there's no way we're out of this completely. I mean, it's not impossible that we could win this. Although Nikon Sports said it was impossible since the 29 previous teams that had won 20 games out of their first 29 had all won the pennant in Japanese pro baseball history dating back to 1936. So there you go, Nikon Sports. Good work on the data. Mm-hmm. But again, it's just data. And like you said, you're never out of it because, you know, tragedies happen. Teams, you know, mysterious things can happen.
Well, it doesn't have to be a tragedy. They had an awful start, but somebody who's leading or who is above them can also have an awful stretch.
Sure.
And that brings them back to the pack. And it's, you know, there are only six teams. So you're going to have opportunities to play the teams in front of you. And if you don't have to win every game, you just have to have a winning record against them. And you can make up.
Obviously they had a lot of problems early on because their plan A for the bullpen, you know, failed spectacularly.
It did.
And now they've basically settled on, okay, these are the guys we want in the late innings, and let's run with it. And they've been able to try that out against some fairly middling competition. And then they got into a weekend series with the Yomiuri Giants, and they didn't need the bullpen on Friday because Koyo Aoyagi threw his second straight complete game. And then on Saturday and Sunday, they won by about a zillion runs. So they didn't need much in the bullpen. So we'll see how that goes going forward. But no, I like that. I think the fighters too are deserving of being last. Here's a team that's they're a team so much like Tsuyoshi Shinjo, it hurts. they don't get on base, they don't score, they play pretty good defense, and they can hit some home runs. And then you know they don't hit for average. So
yeah, I mentioned it that they've had
actually
so
it's not
many
they don't score. Lineups. The problem is they've allowed more runs than anybody else in NPB is the real problem.
And yeah,
he's a good defensive player, so that's not that quite accurate.
It has just been so uneven with the lineups. And again, I think they had some pitchers starting. Who did we have starting today? Who Sugiura?
He's the former closer, Toshihiro. He was their closer last year.
He's been a bullpen guy almost since he got there from the Swallows, right? In a trade or so. Yeah, he has pitched out of the bullpen a lot since he had been there. I don't remember the last time he really had a start. So that was just kind of weird. And they pitched, I think, Naoyuki Uesawa, he pitched on short rest. And it's just a lot of weird unevenness going on there. And again, I'm sure they're trying out a lot of things. There is a lot of talent in that organization, and we're seeing a lot of these young players, and they're capable. But again, I think I told you years ago, you can have a really good weapon if you're aiming it in the wrong direction or using it improperly. You're lessening its effectiveness, and therefore you don't have a great weapon. So I don't know that that's the case. I'm just saying it's just there's a lot of fluidity. There's a lot of fluid things happening up there. And it just, you know, until that stabilizes, yeah, I think we're going to see a lot of inconsistency in the wins and losses as well. But I mean, it's not as bad a team as we saw. Neither is Hanshin as we saw that first, I guess, 3 weeks. But once things get stable, I think we'll see what those teams are. But yeah, they've been pretty bad.
Well, I think the fighters are largely a case of Shinjo is taking basically a lot of the advice that the fighters analytics team was giving to the former manager and going with it. They've used a lot of the short starters as Kuriyama did. They sort of kept with that. I don't think mm-hmm. that's a lot of. They did go to. He announced he was going to go to a 5-man rotation, but that really hasn't been the case. It's been more like I want my best pitchers throwing on 5 days, but everybody else can go hang.
Yes, it's just like I said, unevenness. I won't call it weird. It's unorthodox, and it might work for some of the players. Again, we talked yep. about fun early on. It might be working for some of the players, and for some other players, it might not be working. But the most important thing is what is happening with the team. And I remember joking with, I was talking with Jason Koskrey via Twitter early on in the season, maybe the first couple of weeks or something. And the starting pitcher for the Fighters was getting his brains beaten in, and someone said, Why doesn't Shinjo go out into the mound and move him, get him out of the game? And I think Jason's comment was he's waiting for the manager to do something.
Hashtag I hate.
So, you know, you say, yes, there's a lot of data and a lot of information coming from the front office, and that might be true. And how much of it, again, we don't know, but... That was a funny line. That was a good
well, there's
line.
Been a, there's been a few of those sort of like only from Shinjo moments where you definitely get the feeling he does things because, you know, he's got a license to do things, not really because there's any plan, there's really any organized thought behind them. But by and large, you know, it's baseball, and it's largely a case of, you know, go out and, you know, put guys on the field who can hit and pitch and catch the ball and let it work from there.
Okay. All right. All right. We didn't have any Roki Sasaki starts this week. He is scheduled. He went down to the farm. He is scheduled to pitch this next weekend, this coming weekend. We'll find out when that is, I guess, shortly.
Well, scheduled is probably too strong a word. The Marines have basically said they want him to pitch.
I see. Okay. So. Expected?
Yeah, expected. They're hoping to pitch him. Yep. Okay.
For the weekend. So we'll see mm-hmm. when that happens, and we'll have an update on that probably next time, next episode. Let's go to fielding questions. All right, this one comes from Roger in Tokyo via email, and he says, watching the Kyojin, the Giants, play in Okinawa, I'm reminded of how fun those regional games are. What a thrill for fans who live in a place with no NPB team, and what a great way for NPB to maintain interest nationally. I would love to see more of it in MLB, but I know the problem comes down to the almighty buck. No way teams would give up the income for a home game. So I always wonder, does the home team, he's got in quotation marks, get compensation for giving up a home game? There were probably only a few thousand fans in Naha, a fraction of a usual Giants crowd, and not paying expensive Tokyo Dome ticket prices and not paying overpriced Tokyo Dome food and beer. Those teams lose untold millions of yens when they do this. How does it work? Keep up the great work, J&J. I never miss an episode.
Thank you. Yeah. Mm. Okay, how does it work? First of all, everything depends on what your home park is. Now, the Giants don't lose a penny on concessions revenues because the Giants don't get any concessions revenues at Tokyo Dome. That all goes to Kuroken Land Company, who are the owners of Tokyo Dome. they don't get any advertising income. All they pay money to play at Tokyo Dome. They pay a price per ticket they sell, and they get to keep the rest. So playing at the road parks, they also get, when they play at the road parks, they're also leasing the ballpark, but they get whatever arrangement they can for the tickets. So it's a little bit of a wash. Now the Chiho, the regional games, are a kind of a throwback to the beginnings of Japanese pro baseball when there weren't enough stadiums.
Mm-hmm.
And teams played everywhere. I mean, I've been going through this from my historical research, and there were, in the first years of Japan pro baseball, there were games being played at middle schools, university grounds, police academy training grounds, you name it, they were playing there. I mean, this is professional baseball. I mean, this is elite level professional baseball. So it's an old thing, and it costs money for the teams that own their home parks to play on the roads. So for the Fighters, it doesn't cost them a lot to leave to leave Sapporo Dome, because it means they got less rent to pay for that day.
Mm-hmm.
But when they move into their new park in Kita, Hiroshima next year, then I suspect we're going to see fewer games at Tokyo Dome, because they're going to be making more money at home than they will be going to Tokyo.
Right.
Because then they will be losing concessions revenue. They will be losing all that other income. So that's right. Basically the dynamics of that.
All
they
right.
also Sounds get like- the, they also get the TV revenues. The home team keeps 100% of the TV and radio broadcast revenues.
Sounds like you should put up a chart on jballisland.com and just point out which teams own their stadiums and which teams don't, and then
okay.
give some more,
I will. I thank you. Okay. That'll go in with my not on my dime, not sponsors list, because people wanted to know why the Carp were playing at Hiroshima Citizens Stadium, which is the official name of their ballpark.
Mm-hmm.
Because Mazda isn't paying me a dime, so I'm not going to call it Mazda.
Right.
But I'm open to offers, Mazda.
Yeah.
And Baluna and Adelance or whatever is that dome in Nagoya.
Okay. I wanted to say, the only thing I really know about the regional games is that when I was living in Nagoya for 12 years, Nagaragawa Stadium was so far away from me in Nagoya that I didn't even think about going there.
Mm.
And that the Dragons would have these games. A couple times I thought, oh, there's a game at Nagoya Stadium. And then, you know, you look closer at the schedule. It was a home game, but they're playing at Nagaragawa Stadium way out in Gifu. And I'm like, there's no way. I'm not driving out there. I'm not taking a 2-hour train ride out there.
Right.
I wouldn't be able to get back home after the game if I took a train. So I'd have to find a hotel. This is nutso. Why are they doing this? Why are they taking my game away? So I felt that way as a fan. But I also remember that the Kintetsu Buffaloes used to play at Nagoya Stadium once in a while, and then Nagoya Dome a few times against Oryx, and got to see Ichiro as a fan at Nagoya Dome. So that was the benefit, the upside of it, is sometimes that these other I think you mentioned it to me too, that the Kintetsu line runs from Osaka to Nagoya. So that was a way to entice some of the Osaka or fans who lived in between Nagoya and Osaka, which is basically on the bullet train is about an hour. And you could hop on, if you lived between Osaka and Nagoya, and hop on the train and see the Buffaloes play at Nagoya. For me, it was just a pain because I wanted the team to be, you know, at the stadium that was only 20 minutes away from my house as opposed to 2 hours.
Well, there was the great story, you know, when the Fighters moved to Sapporo, you know, they have to get ownership approval. They need approval of, I don't know, it's 2/3, you know, 8 of the owners or 9 of the owners. But Yoshiaki Tsutsumi, then the owner of the of the Cebu Lions was campaigning against them. He said, Sapporo is better off without its own team because they get to watch all these other teams come and play here. Who wants to have one boring team? Said a guy, you know, a guy who people didn't want to go to their, you know, their ballpark in the boonies. And he was building up Sapporo to be their, you know, to be his sort of alternate second ballpark. And of course, Tsutsumi would know all about, you know, teams not, cities not having, you know, big cities not having their teams because he's the one who bought the Lions and moved them from Fukuoka. So he deprived Fukuoka of one team and he wanted to deprive Sapporo of another. So
boring.
I know.
He had me at boring.
Yeah,
why would he say that about a baseball team? What is wrong with you?
Well, the thing was, is they should be able to be a free market. They should be an open city for all of Japanese baseball, like a colony or something. And the funny thing is, I went to the first Fighters game in Sapporo as their prospective new team. Nobody even knew who they were. It was in 2003. It was in March 2003. They played their first exhibition against the Yomiuri Giants. Everybody was a Giants fan. The Giants had long, infiltrated the Hokkaido market with games in Sapporo and Asahikawa. And everybody was a Giants fan. And then within about 3 years of the Fighters moving there, the Giants stopped going to Sapporo.
For some reason, yeah.
Because nobody wanted to go. People only wanted to see the Fighters.
Yep.
So yeah, there's the story.
They became extremely popular very quickly up there. Yeah.
Sure. I mean, and, you know, and Tsutsumi's, is he dead or is he still in jail? I don't know.
I don't know either. Okay. Nice question, though, but.
Sorry.
All right. All right, so yeah, we'll look forward to having you put up that chart on jballisland.com. Thank you so much for the question, Roger. We appreciate it. Anyone else who has a question, send it to yakyujohn@gmail.com. Hit us up on Twitter at JBWPodcast with the hashtag HighHeat. You can leave a message, comment, notes on the Facebook page, or leave us a note via Twitter, you know. Look for us on Google Play and iTunes. We will talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
See you at the ballparks.
Follow the hosts on Twitter at JBW Podcast and at JBallAllen. And feel free to submit your questions by email or tweet with hashtag HighHeat. Thank you for listening to Japan Baseball Weekly.